We are now officially 1 week away from the Premier League returning. I'm getting nervous. And Sam, maybe Jules is getting nervous.
I think so. I think he's decided that it's all got a little bit too much and he actually needs to take a holiday, Kels.
Yeah, he is still on holiday and we got a message a day before the record saying my Wi-Fi is not going to hold out, which, by the way, we're quite grateful for because normally you get that message 10 minutes before the record. So I'm not even going to call you Super Sug because I'm going to call you regular on the show. Ian, it's been a while, but you're back here living. Yeah, when was the last time you were on? I was trying to think about this.
I can't remember. That's how long it's been.
I don't know if it was the season before last. But anyway, you're very familiar to all of our listeners who often ask us about you. How are you? How's life? And importantly, how's FPL planning going?
Yeah, I mean, my summer was going fantastically well. Nice and relaxing. Been away, chilled out a little bit. Thought, yeah, the Premier League season's coming. And then I started to make my FPL draft. And I've done something, I think, quite silly with my first draft, which I'm sure we'll talk about at some point. So I actually feel the same as you. I feel a bit apprehensive, nervous, and don't really want the season to come now. Game week one could be watched from behind a sofa. FPL is definitely back.
That's the spirit. Didn't anyone tell him we're meant to be a positive, upbeat podcast? Doesn't want to play FPL, doesn't now want the season to come. Thanks for coming on, Ian. We'll speak to you another time. No.
Cheers, mate.
Sam, what we are going to be missing this week is, without Jules, is kind of a little bit of an update on what's been happening in pre-season. Because, I mean, I was working for Five Live last night and I was working on the PSG Villa game on the Super Cup, and I was intrigued by seeing what Villa looked like. And I feel like at this point it's a bit more like when you can start, the players are starting to come back, albeit Villa didn't have the likes of Ollie Watkins, Ezri Konsa, players are starting to come back and we can get a little bit more of an idea. If you can, I'm not expecting it to be Jules style, but what have you taken away from what you've seen so far?
Well, I have written something else because I decided that if Jules wasn't here, somebody was going to have to stand up. And so I sat down and I've written something about, because actually yesterday was quite a big day for pre-season. So let's start with Villa because you've mentioned them. So obviously they lost in the Super Cup to PSG. And as you mentioned, they were without a number of their first choice players. They didn't have Martinez, didn't have Konsa, didn't have Watkins, but they did have Majo, who was available for Villa in this one. He originally signed for them back in January, started this game, scores the goal, assisted by John McGinn. That's on the back of four previous goals now in pre-season. So five goals in 352 minutes for him. He actually had three chances in the first half. So he's definitely one to watch despite being super young. Looked really impressive. Last night also, Guimarães made his debut for Arsenal in their 1-1 draw with Como. Interesting Arsenal team to start with. Had five academy graduates in the starting 11. After an hour, was much more like the Arsenal team that I think we'll probably expect to see in Sunday's Community Shield. And in the last half an hour of that game, we started to see the partnership that might exist between Odegaard and Guimarães. So I think that might be quite interesting for us as FPL managers as we all look for a route into that Arsenal midfield that maybe isn't Saka levels of investment. It was Miles Lewis-Skelly with the goal for them in that one. I'm sure Ian will talk more about it in a minute, but Manchester United and Leeds also played last night. It was a 1-1 draw over in Ireland. Bruno Fernandes came off the bench. He was very much well received by the Irish crowd when he came on. Had a goal ruled out for offside. Also had one off the bar, which would have been assisted by Yuri Tielemans. And he did, though, miss a penalty, which we're starting to get a little bit more used to now with Bruno Fernandes after last season. No Maguire in the squad for this one. There was another All Premier League match between Newcastle and Everton last night. That one happened in Edinburgh. Everton looking very impressive. Came out 3-1 in that one. Travers started in goal with Ndai starting and Barry leading the line up top. Barry scored the opener. Dewsbury Hall won a penalty, which Ndai took. Interesting because it was despite Barry still being on the pitch at that point to make it 2-0. Newcastle were in a bit of disarray, changed all 10 players at half time. They did look a little bit better in the second half, but to be honest, Everton were still quite dominant. George put them three up. Barnes pulled one back for Newcastle. Also last night, Nottingham Forest beat Bayer Leverkusen 2-1. Chris Wood wasn't there, but it was a very strong team from Glasner. Ndai scoring from a Gibbs White assist in a goal that very much looked like it had come off the training ground. And Kalamandu scoring the winner in the 90th minute for them. Igor Jesus was actually quite unlucky not to score in this one. He had one that went just over the bar just before half-time. Fulham also played last night, a 2-2 draw with Malaga. Iwobi and Sessegnon with the goals in that one. Iwobi now has two goals and an assist in pre-season. He's only played 367 minutes, so definitely one to keep an eye on. And then we've also seen Benjamin Sesko and Erling Haaland back in training this week. So some interesting ones for FPL managers to keep an eye on.
Yes. Anything you've taken away, Ian? I'm intrigued about what you've learned from Manchester United, because I think there's a lot of interest in them, isn't there? Given the fact that they've had quite a stable pre-season and everyone's saying, no, Europe, they're going to be great.
No Europe. That was
last season was Europe. Whoops. Sorry.
Come on, yes, Kelly. Everyone's excited up here. They've got the passports out again.
There was a lot of excitement because of that, I think, isn't it, really?
That's maybe the complicating factor a little bit with United, but you don't have to worry about that just yet because obviously the Champions League doesn't start for a few weeks. And the first two matches being Hull and Ipswich means that you need to be invested in United. In my draft, I'm tripled up at the moment. Bruno Fernandes, given his form last season, given what he showed off the bench in that Leeds friendly, he's not had much time back with the team after the World Cup, but he's an absolute certain starter in game week one. There's no question about that. And there's lots of question marks with some of the World Cup players across the league. I don't think he's one. The other player I think he'll definitely make my draft is Brian Mbeumo. Now, he had a decent first season for United last season. It certainly started well. It drifted a bit and then it ended okay by the final few weeks. But in pre-season, he's played in three different positions. Last night, he played in the number 10. Obviously, that's Bruno's position, so he won't be there for much longer. But he played right wing and centre forward in some of the other games. And he did that last season too. I think Carrick will find a way to get him in the team. One assist last night against Leeds. Three goals in pre-season prior to that. So he's going to be a pick for me. Also with Leeds as well, I was quite impressed with James Trafford. He looked the part in goal for them. And their defensive record last season was pretty strong. His distribution's definitely an upgrade on what they had previously. I feel like he's going to get an assist at some point this season because his long-range passing is so good. And Leeds' opening fixtures are quite strong as well. So he's actually coming to my thinking after watching the match last night too.
This brings us quite nicely onto something that we've wanted to talk about in the last couple of pods, but I haven't had time to because of, well, there's just been so much to talk about, but fixture runs, because Manchester United are very high on the fixture ticker. In fact, they're second behind Liverpool. In case you haven't checked out the fixture ticker and you're new to FPL, it's available on fantasy.premierleague.com or on the app. And it just enables you to see the teams that on paper have the best fixtures. The Premier League ranked them by difficulty. And it just helps us chunk the fixtures kind of into little blocks. And then we can use our chips around it, or we can target players. You could say, well, I'm going to have them for the first four game weeks. And I know their fixtures get a bit tougher. And then I'm going to switch to another player. You might be seeing managers say that a lot at the moment, because that's how often we pick certain players over other ones. So as I said, Manchester United are second, but let's start with the team that are top. Liverpool. I thought Andoni Iraola's comments last week were really interesting after they let two games in a row, they let a lead slip. And he said at the moment, basically, they're not able to do kind of what he wants to do. They don't almost have the legs for it at the moment. I have Szoboszlai. Sam, do you still have Szoboszlai in your draft?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
Ian, any Liverpool players in your draft?
Alexander Isak at the moment.
Interesting.
I really like those fixtures to start the season. I've not got Erling Haaland. Let's just get it out there straight away. Erling Haaland. I can't believe that's a sentence I'm actually saying, and whether that sticks for the week. It is the only reason why I'm nervous and apprehensive about game week one, basically, because the most owned player, is it something like 75% ownership, is not in my team at the moment. But I plan on wildcarding early. I plan on using my bench boost early. So if you don't have him, you can spread the funds and really have upgrades elsewhere. I suppose the player who'd be replacing him in my lineup is Alexander Isak. So it's just whether you think he can match Erling Haaland in the opening games. Now, last season unquestionably was a massive disappointment for him. His form suffered. Obviously, he suffered badly with injuries at Liverpool as well. But Newcastle away, game week one, a Newcastle team that's a bit all over the place at the moment. Isak going back to his old team after all the controversy this time last year. He says he's back fit. He says he's back confident. What a prospect that could be. And then after that, Nottingham Forest, Ipswich, Fulham, Bournemouth. It's a pretty kind start for Liverpool. So in some ways, I feel like Szoboszlai or Wirtz on their own is not enough.
I am leaning more towards Wirtz now, Sam. I mean, you and I are going to go with Erling Haaland, aren't we? So Isak is going to be nigh on impossible to get into our teams. But everyone, I think there's more noise about Wirtz than there was. But obviously, we said it on the last show. Szoboszlai is that bit cheaper.
Yeah, and I think there is, and I think we talked about it last week. Like, there is definitely potential to double up with those two. Like, and that's something that I haven't ruled out, having Wirtz and Szoboszlai together, because like Ian was just saying, I do like their attacking threat. It's just that for me, Alexander Isak is just a bridge too far, because I don't want to be going without Erling Haaland. And I think Ian is right in what he said. Like, your strategy going into this season in terms of your chips is going to be really important in deciding how you start the season, because maybe given that we've only just seen Haaland come back into training this week, that we could be in a position where some managers decide, well, okay, the opening few fixtures, particularly game weeks 1 and 2, are much nicer for Manchester United and Liverpool than they are for Manchester City. So do we go with a situation where you are happy to early wild card into game week 3, and then you can bring him in for the game that they have against Coventry? Or do you just go in with him from the outset? Now, for me, I just think Erling Haaland is too important, and I don't want to early wild card, because I just feel like we're going to get a lot more knowledge by the time we hit the first international break, which is 5 game weeks down the line. So I want to get through the first 5 game weeks. So I'm looking at a fixture run of 5 weeks. And that's why Liverpool, the double up with Wirtz and Szoboszlai, and also the double up with Manchester United midfielders with probably Mbeumo and Bruno, makes a lot of sense, because those 5 fixtures for those two teams, they're the best ones to start the season. So I think the reason why fixtures are so important is because it helps you to define what your chip strategy might look like and when you might play things. And in that case, I can see why, if Ian's going to go early with chips, why the no Haaland thing is attractive for the opening 2 weeks.
Yes, that's kind of the thinking. The problem is that the more you look into it, and obviously Erling Haaland is a great pick. There's no question about that. He's the best FPL player available to us. So going without him seems a bit mad. And then you start to look into his history in the Premier League as well. August is the month he scored his most goals in for Manchester City. So he is a traditionally strong starter to the new season. And I thought, hang on, but does that actually apply to the opening day? And then you have a look last season, 2 goals against Wolves, the season before, a goal against Chelsea, season before, 2 goals against Burnley. And then his Premier League debut back in 2022, 2 goals against West Ham. So the argument to say go without him becomes weaker the more you look into the data from August. But like Sam said, he's only just back in training. But then the other side of it makes me think, well, Enzo Maresca's new at Manchester City. Does he really not start Erling Haaland from the very beginning in the Premier League? I guess the Community Shield is going to actually tell us quite a bit about what we might see from Manchester City in the opening weeks of the season. It certainly will be a more serious team selection than the ones in pre-season. By that point, Haaland would have had about a week's training maybe, so maybe that's too early for him to start. But even maybe an hour against Bournemouth on the opening day would be enough for him to score. But then again, at his price point, he has to score. Almost scoring is par for him because he's so expensive. I'm sort of talking myself in and around this, aren't I? I mean, the other side of it as well is, where are the other surefire picks in the league? Where are the other players that you can absolutely hang your hat on to say these guys are definitely 100% going to deliver for me? There's not many of them. Yeah, but then Bruno aside, name me 2 or 3 more, because I would have Bruno as well, I suppose, if I had Haaland. So, you know, looking at my draft, there's people like Brian and Bumo. Florian Wirtz has been in and out of it. As said, Alexander Isak. So, and then there's the defence, obviously, as you can spend a bit more money on defence, but maybe it is a bit silly to go without him because he is probably the only guarantee aside from maybe Bruno Fernandes. But then again, his form last season was extraordinary. Can he do it again when there's Europe to contend with as well? The big questions, but it would only be for 2 or 3 weeks. You know, it would only be to play bench boost in game week 1, get a good start. The idea of going without him for the Coventry game in game week 3, again, makes me even more nervous than going without him in game week 1. So, you know, if you're thinking that he needs to be in your team by game week 3, then maybe it's just stupid not to have him in game week 1. But you see my dilemma. You see me trying to work out whether this is a good idea or not.
I tell you what, Ian, run us through the draft that you have come up with, because on this pod so far, myself, Sam and Jules have had Haaland throughout, and I'm sure listeners are intrigued to know what you can get by spreading those funds around.
I guess the main thing is it helps you to beef up midfield and have a few more different options in there who are, a bit more expensive. So the midfield is Bruno Fernandes, Antoine Semenyo, Brian and Bumo. At the moment, Dominic Szoboszlai, although that's been Florian Wirtz, it's to and fro a little bit. And then Illiman and Jai from Everton. Up front is Isak, like I mentioned before. João Pedro, who I think is just an easy pick for everyone, really, to be honest. And then Tierno Barry currently is my third attacker. He was very much a bench boost option. He's only 5.5. Like you mentioned before, he scored in pre-season for Everton. He looks like he'll start the season up front. Quite like their opening fixtures as well, although a double Everton attack to begin the season is brave, considering some of the issues they had with scoring goals last season. But then in defence, I've then got a triple up of the Arsenal defence for the opening couple of matches. So David Raya in goal, Mosquera and White in defence. That could be Calafiori as well. I've got Harry Maguire from United. Again, the fixtures are good for them. Palestra, who's a bit of a left field pick at the moment from Chelsea. New signing Marco Palestra from Italy, who's looked really advanced in pre-season and the formation for Chelsea under Xabi Alonso. If he's going to be a wing back, I think that's an interesting pick at 5.5. And then there's just filler then after that, really. Leif Davis from Ipswich. Could be any of the Ipswich guys at 4 million. And I've also got Ruffs as well from Sunderland, just because their first couple of matches are pretty good as well. So again, it enables me to have a good, strong bench boost one. In some ways, it's wasted money, but then that's another reason why I want to play the wild card early, because at the moment, there isn't a certain pick for a 4 million goalkeeper. So... you know, just want to empty the value out of the team, basically, out of the bench, sorry, when we get to game week 3, something like that, where it doesn't matter as much about your fifth attacker, it doesn't matter as much about your goalkeeper, because the bench boost is already done and dusted by them.
Interesting, Sam. Your thoughts on Ian's team? Does it tempt you to go no Haaland, I mean?
I like it if it's for, I can understand, I do understand the temptation for bench boost one.
It's a very complicated way of saying no, Sam.
I'll be the one that says no. I love Isak, and I love the fact that you've managed to get a premium goalkeeper in there, and it feels more balanced than my team, but I'm an FPL player that never has a balanced team. So to me, I can't go without Haaland, but that's also because I'm a sheep, but I understand the logic of not going with him, and I really respect it.
I also think, Kels, that one of the things we have to consider is that, so bench boost should bring you loads of extra points, right? It should be the thing that
it doesn't, the end of very game often week one, though, does it?
Well, I mean, anyway. Nor me, because I always seem to pick it in the wrong week, but it should, right? So going into game week one, you should be in a position where if you have your bench boost active with four additional players to most of the game, you should have a really good start to the season. But my issue is that without Erling Haaland, if Erling Haaland does what he usually does in August, if he starts on a high, if he opens his account under Maresca, looking really promising, you could wipe out all of the benefit that your bench boost has just bought you in just not having one player. And so whilst I understand the value that you can get by having Ruffs and Raya for the opening week of the season, whilst I can see the value that you get by having a bench like Ian's just discussed, my worry for people that go without Haaland is that all the gains that you make by having the bench boost active are just lost by not having Haaland in your team if he does anything. Because at 70-odd% ownership, that's going to massively hurt in terms of the impact that has on your starting position.
The ownership could be something like 150%.
Because he's going to be highly captained.
Because he'll be highly captained, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think, you know, the other thing that puts me off is that it almost certainly guarantees that game week 2 or into game week 3, you're wildcarding. And I said last week, the thing that massively puts me off that is that we don't have those additional AFCON transfers this year at Christmas that we can use as a mini wildcard. Instead, we're going to have to wait till the second wildcard becomes active. And feasibly, you don't want to play that straight away. You want to wait for the blanks and the doubles that we will get later on in the season around the cup matches. So you could have 20 plus weeks of not being able to wildcard your team. And yes, people will say, well, you can use your free transfers. And you can, absolutely. But if you have injuries to your team, if you have other things to contend with, that's a problem. And this team does not have a spare 8 million around to start upgrading Isak to Haaland. So you're going to have to move money elsewhere. So you could then be taking points hits if you don't want to use that wild card early. So all of these things are things you have to massively consider if you go without Haaland. I think you have to accept, if you go without Haaland in 1 and 2, you're wildcarding into 3, or you are taking a points hit to bring him in at that point. And well, you have to be comfy with that.
Yeah, I can just swap Bruno Fernandes and Alexander Isak to a 5.5 midfielder and Haaland. That's been something I've thought about for game week 3. Then again, Liverpool have got Ipswich away in game week 3. It's not Coventry at home, but it's still a pretty good fixture for them. So there is potentially a bit of coverage there, but you are going into the season with an absolutely mammoth gamble to kick it off. And like you said, your plans could be in tatters by Sunday evening, basically, of the first weekend. It's retrievable, obviously. You know, it's a roll of the dice. It's a bit of fun. But it is something I'm seriously considering. Whether I do it or not, I don't know. But I thought, let's start on the front foot. Let's come on the podcast. Let's give people different ideas and different things to discuss and think about. And I definitely think it could work. I'm not saying it will, but it could.
Yeah, no, and people will do that, and I can completely understand why. Sam, let's see where your draft is at then.
So actually, I haven't changed that much in the last week or so. I feel like I am starting to settle. The goalkeepers are still the same at the moment, Kinski and Rushworth. I am still thinking about taking that 0.5 out. At one point this week, I did have a Kinski-Dubravka double up, but the back of my head, I'm thinking, if Spurs do play well, if we start the season well and we look like it's going well, do I want to have used two spots up on two Spurs goalkeepers? It doesn't leave me with much flex across the rest of my team. So I'm not keen on that. And as Ian said, we don't really have a 4.0 goalkeeper just yet. So hence the double up with the two 4.5s. Mosquera, Gvardiol, Mitchell, they haven't changed since last week. They're all still there. I am still thinking about taking 0.5 again out of Mitchell and going down to a 4.0. Have brought in Luke Shaw this week. Decided that I just felt like the opening two fixtures for Manchester United were too good to not have a Manchester United defender in. Pondering on whether I spend the extra on Maguire, but Shaw just feels like really good value for those opening two fixtures, so probably go there. And then I've moved to Issa Diop. Just feels like a slightly better pick defensively than going for somebody like Giles. Again, it could yet be any 4.0. And depending upon what I do with Mitchell, I'll look for a nice rotating pair there. The midfield barely changed. Bruno Fernandes, Phil Foden, Pascal Gross and Dom Szoboszlai, those guys have stayed. Have brought in Fulham's new signing, Shay Charles. I like the look of him a lot. And at 5.0, I just think he looks like really great value for money. Last season in the Championship, he averaged 11.3 defensive contributions in a game. So clearances, blocks, interceptions, tackles, recoveries. 11.3. Well, you need 12 in a game, obviously, to get DEFCON. I expect he'll end up doing a little bit more defensive work in the Premier League. So if he's averaging almost hitting DEFCON every week as it is, then it feels like he could be another Elliot Anderson style player that you're kind of always starting on four, which always feels like a really nice place to be. So currently with him, I would like to find a way to have a better, to have an extra Manchester United player in that midfield. I can get easily to a 7 million. I can't easily get to an 8 million. I was really hoping that Sesko was going to be the one because it's so much easier to get there, but I just don't think it will for the start of the season. And then up top, it's still João Pedro, Haaland, and I'm back with Solanke. I'm Solanke, Igor Jesus, it's backwards and forwards and backwards and forwards between the two of them. That is the position. And Ian was talking about going for somebody like Barry, who's slightly cheaper, Ollie McBurnie in the same boat. That is a place where I could find another 0.5, which would help me to upgrade the midfield. And maybe then that moves me to playing five in midfield and two up top most weeks rather than four in midfield and three up top most weeks. So I just need to decide on what that team structure is going to look like and go from there. But I feel like I'm settling. I feel like I'm nearly there now.
Yeah, weirdly, my team hasn't changed much either. In fact, I think the only thing that's changed is I've gone from Mosquera to Calafiori, but that changes every single day. So, and it feels
you're
like
you're going to be getting rid of Erling Haaland now, though, Kelly, aren't you? After the compelling argument that
I understand the argument, I'm not acting on the argument. No, so I'm still at Kinski, Shaw. I'd like Shaw to become Maguire if I can find the funds. Gvardiol, Calafiori, Gross, Fernandez, Szoboszlai. I've still got Saka. That is the one position which, as I've said on every single podcast so far, I really want to have him. Whether this next week is so telling and has always been the case with me with Saka. It sounds like he's returned early. He's fit. I think he's got a bit of a point to prove. He's just very expensive. If I don't have Saka, I'll probably go to Mbeumo. That's where I'd like to go. Do I want to double up on the Man United attack? I don't know. I don't think it's bad. Calvert-Lewin, Haaland, Pedro. Calvert-Lewin could become someone else too. And my bench is Dubravka, Konza, Slater, Thomas.
Just a couple of things in that, Kelly. So Harry Maguire missed the game against Leeds. Don't be worried, though. That's just a case of managing
minutes.
It made
me feel a bit better, to be honest. I thought, oh,
yeah, he's played a lot of action in pre-season. He's been one of the players who's played the most minutes. So he was just rested for that. Don't worry about that. The one thing with Luke Shaw, obviously, is 0.5 less. There's less of a DEFCON. There's maybe more of an attacking threat in open play, certainly not from set pieces, though. Maguire has been brilliant across the last few years, really, for United. And no Casemiro means that maybe he would be more of a target for them, because obviously Casemiro had so much success from set pieces last season. The other one was Saka. I mean, I was quite surprised when I had a look. He actually scored more goals last season than he did the season before, and I thought he'd had a really underwhelming campaign last year. But it's actually the last two seasons that have been lower on output for him. So you go back to 23-24, 16 goals, 12 assists. It was 7 goals, 10 assists last season. So, yeah, you want to find a way into the Arsenal attack, don't you? But at the moment, I'm tripled up on the defence because it just feels like there's a bit more certainty there.
Do you think?
With the players. But then again, if Ezri Konsa signs for Arsenal,
that's kind of what I've got
the
in the
most
pot,
owned
reason.
Defender. He'd be the most owned defender in the game at 4.5 million if he becomes a first pick for them. And obviously, people with Mascara in the drafts need to keep an eye on that very closely. But at 4.5 million for an Arsenal defender, and a good one at that as well, who's got potential of DEFCONs and attacking returns too, and bonus points like he's shown at Villa, he's going to break the game. Everyone will have him, basically. So, I just can't see. Even Gyökeres, I sort of looked at for the first couple of weeks because his record against lower teams last season was so good. He scored 14 times in the Premier League and 11 of those goals came against teams in the bottom half. An opening weekend game against his old team, Coventry, at home feels like a great fixture for him. But I have absolutely no idea whether he'll get picked or not. So
it's really hard with Arsenal. Can't go with him. Yeah, Arsenal I find really difficult because I really want to invest more heavily in them because the fixtures are good. They are the reigning champions. I trust them when it comes to FPL picks. And I think that is a really important thing is that when you're making your first drafts, you look for players, or I do anyway, because I don't want an early wild card. I'm looking at players and teams that I feel like I can trust for a longer period of time. So the likes of Manchester United with the fixtures and what we saw under Carrick last season make them trustworthy. The same with Arsenal, right? Over the last few seasons, we've seen nothing but really good things from Arsenal, regardless of whether they've ended up winning trophies or not. The performances, the consistency has always been there. And in FPL, they've been incredibly trustworthy. And I look at these opening set of fixtures that they have between now and the international break, obviously starting off with Coventry and then it's Aston Villa, Chelsea, Sunderland and Brighton. These are fixtures that I want to be investing in them from. Now, every other season, Gabriel would have been the first name on my team sheet, but at 8 million, it just feels too difficult. I think that we need to think a bit outside the box. As you just said, that the conversation around the Arsenal defence is interesting and who you go with. I mean, Raya's the easy pick, isn't he? It's like, well, go with Raya. You know what you're going to get with Raya. But with Saliba out, it feels a little bit more complicated across that defence. I want an Arsenal attacker in my team more than anything, but I keep looking at it and thinking, I actually don't know. I don't know where to go. I don't feel like Saka is worth 9.5 right now, given what we saw from him at the World Cup as well. That worries me. But where else would you go? Because, like, is Gomares going to be an option? Well, maybe, but I don't feel like I've understood that yet. Sunday's game feels really important, doesn't it? Like, what we see on Sunday from them in terms of who starts in the Community Shield and how they play might be the decision maker in terms of the Arsenal attacker of choice for us.
What about Christos Solis, who has impressed in pre-season for them, a new signing from Club Bruges? Again, there's maybe not certainty over whether he starts the season as a first choice. Perhaps the Community Shield will give us a bit more info on that. Don't worry about the last time he was in the Premier League, which was at Norwich. People might have forgotten about that. 2021-22, no goals, no assists. I think he only got 16 points that season. Don't worry about that. Just look at last season. 22 goals and 29 assists in all competitions. All right, the league he was playing in, the Belgian league, not as strong as the Premier League, but they are very compelling numbers. He's been taking set pieces as well a little bit. In pre-season, he whips in a pretty mean corner. So I'm sure Mikel Arteta and his merry men will be across that ability. I wonder if he finds his way into our teams because he's only 6.5. So
he's looked really good. He's been really impressive in pre-season. I know if Jules was here, he'd probably wax lyrical and give us some nice stats. But I've been really impressed by him. It's one of those, isn't it, where I think, you know, we know what Arsenal can be like from set pieces, and he's just slotted into that team super nicely. So definitely one to watch. And at 6.5, he's super easy to get. So he is definitely the one that is kind of on my immediate watch list from the Arsenal attack perspective, because I think he's the cheapest and nicest, possibly the best route in if you don't want to spend the money on Saka.
To be honest, he'd be lovely, wouldn't he? Because for someone like me, yeah, getting the Arsenal attack, I just love Bukayo Saka, as you know. So in terms of the fixture difficulty, it does go, going back to that, it goes Liverpool, Manchester United, then Arsenal, which is actually really nice to have three popular teams at the top of the ticker, because it gives us like double reason, really, or multiple reasons to bring them in. Then after that, it's Brentford. I know, Sam, they start with Spurs, but they've got nice fixtures. It's sometimes hard to pick Brentford players, but actually there's some really nice cheaper options in there. And I know Sangare is one that's caught a lot of people's attentions in the FPL world.
Really interests me. He does. Like, until Charles signed for Fulham, I was all about Sangare. And I was
You're thinking, hunting for Elliot Andersons, aren't you?
Ian, I am. Everyone yeah, is. Absolutely. I think that that's really important. And we should learn a lesson from last season, right? Last season, FPL changed dramatically with the introduction of defensive contributions. And I think for some of us, it took a bit longer to get used to the idea that you would pick the centre-backs over the marauding wing-backs, and that you would pick the more defensively minded midfielders over maybe some of the cheaper but more attacking options in midfield. And this season, I'm kind of determined that I try to consider that a little bit more carefully. So I'm looking at how do I invest in those more defensively minded players, because like I said with Charles, when I was talking about him earlier, if you can guarantee yourself 4 points most weeks out of a player that's your cheap option that's sitting on your bench and that you might need them to come off the bench, or you might need them for a bench boost, that's kind of perfect. And Elliot Anderson was kind of all kinds of perfect for us last season. So I don't really want to pay 6.5 for Elliot Anderson, because it's that little bit more money. I want to pay 5 or 5.5 to find the next Elliot Anderson, because really that's what FPL is all about. It's about finding the value in these picks. Sangare, I think, is a really great option. We get some attacking threat from him as well, which is always nice, but we also get almost certain defensive contributions in most of the game weeks that he's going to play in. So him, I think he looks great. Now, the bigger question for a lot of FPL managers will be, do you go with a Thiago? Because at 8, it's expensive. Like last year, we were used to having him nice and cheap. But I think Brentford, there is a lot of value there. We've got Ayer as well at the back, who's really cheap and is a nice enabler as well. You've obviously still got Kelleher in goal, who again looks like still a decent option to pick. So I don't think you should overlook the Bees. Like, the fixtures are good just because they've got Spurs on the opening day. It's a home fixture. They'll want to start well.
Decent game, that. I don't know what you mean.
Well, we'll see. But I certainly don't think that
game
should
offer. Everyone's telling us Spurs are going to be great now.
Where did they finish last year?
Doesn't matter. It's all about this year, Ian. We look forwards. We don't look back. It's forwards. Okay. It's forwards. So I think, you know, you look at the opening fixtures, Spurs, Leeds, Sunderland, Bournemouth, and then Chelsea. Then that is not a terrible batch of fixtures to start the season. There's definitely, you know, you would expect teams like Spurs, like Chelsea, to be very attacking. So defensive contributions could easily come in games like that. So yeah, I'm definitely not put off Brentford. I don't have one at the minute, but they are the team that's kind of sitting there on my watch list of teams that I go, I haven't got a Brentford player and I probably feel like I should have.
I don't have any Brentford players, but the more you talked about it there, the more I sort of thought about the fact that the start to this season is quite unprecedented, because there's so many managerial changes across the league. I think there's something like 9 new Premier League managers who will begin the opening weekend in charge of a club that they weren't in charge of last year, which is absolutely unprecedented. So Brentford do offer a little bit more certainty, because we obviously saw them last year under Keith Andrews. We know a little bit more what they're about. And when, again, you know, even some of the top sides invested in Liverpool, Manchester City, Chelsea, even Spurs, we didn't see that much of last season under De Zerbi. So yeah, you probably do need a few here and there that you can rely on a little bit more, and you can sort of lean on a little bit. I mean, Kevin Schade's data from last season was great, even though the returns weren't brilliant. He's quite a cheap way into the Brentford side if you think Igor Thiago's too much. So maybe he's an option to look at. But yeah, I did find myself when I put the draft together trying to look for you know, right, Arteta was at Arsenal last year, right? Maybe we know a bit more about him. Emery at Villa, not so much Brentford, but that does ring true in terms of him being in charge last season. So, yeah, it's a tricky start to the season, this. Really tricky. I don't remember there being this many question marks over even some of the key assets, actually, with the World Cup taken into consideration too. So hopefully that means there's lots of variation in people's teams and it's a really fun start.
Yeah, actually getting you on and seeing your team actually made me quite excited, because I thought sometimes I think we can be quite narrow-minded and think, oh, because we've all got Haaland, everyone's got him. But actually there will be people like yourself. And like you said, there's going to, his price point and other price points mean there's going to be a lot of variety. Sam, do you also target, I won't go through all of the fixture difficulty rating now because that's 20 teams to go through. But I think the headlines are that those four are the top. Crystal Palace are next, then it's Newcastle, obviously. They're in a bit of transition at the moment. And Everton, Ian mentioned before, I think that Everton have some nice fixtures and also some interesting cheap options there. Then it goes Chelsea, Spurs, then we get down to Man City, who I don't think we really mind where they are, do we? Sam, do you look at these fixture runs throughout the season and target your chips around them?
Yeah. And I also target different clubs for different things. So like, I'm looking at the opening 5 weeks. So usually I would start the season with six, but with this international break, the long international break, starting the season with looking at five makes a lot of sense. And then I look for patterns in the fixtures. So I'll look for, I like to use my transfers as carefully as possible. So is there a block of time, not necessarily for the bigger players, so Haaland, Bruno Fernandes, the Arsenal defence, I kind of see them as fixture proof, so I don't worry about that. But with my other players, I look for blocks of fixtures. So for example, Crystal Palace have a fantastic block of fixtures between game week 3 and game week 9. So I'm looking at, do I get Crystal Palace players in for that block of time? It's good because it gives me an opportunity to see how they start the season, new manager, all of that stuff. So it gives me a couple of weeks to assess. Similar with Spurs, their block of fixtures that's really good early on is between 7 and 13. So I'm looking at that. I'm also looking at maybe a potential wildcard 6, bench boost 7 strategy. So Spurs fit that narrative nicely because they're about to enter a good run of fixtures. So going heavy on them for a bench boost makes a lot of sense. Liverpool, for example, have a really great block of fixtures between 12 and 21. That's ideal because it gets you into the busy Christmas period and gets you through into the second wildcard window. So for me, I'm always looking, and Man City are similar, it's 16 through 22 for them. That's especially nice. So I'm always looking for those like little chunks of the season where I can say, if I invest in this player now, obviously barring an injury or catastrophic problems, I should have a good run of fixtures where they can sit in my team and do me a good service, and then look to move them on at the end of that block to somebody that's about to start a great run of fixtures.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. In terms of rotating players, I think we hear it a lot with goalkeepers, don't we? And do you buy into that theory when you look at fixtures and teams that and players that you can swap out depending on how hard their fixtures are?
Yeah, you can. I mean, obviously it's been in defence traditionally or goalkeeper where we have done that. But DEFCON's has kind of changed my thinking on that a little bit, because when you get players who have got difficult fixtures, the chance of them getting DEFCONs is much higher. So in some ways, I don't rotate my defenders as much as I did. There are some nice rotating pairs that you can look at. I've seen City and Manchester City and Coventry City shared quite a lot, actually, in terms of rotating the defence. So I think Milan Van Ewijk was the player that this was modelled on, who's four million, so maybe an option there for people who want someone cheap. And if he's paired with a City defender like Josko Vardiol, you're basically looking at the first 9 game weeks of having home fixtures against Bournemouth, Hull, Coventry, Brighton, Sunderland, Newcastle, Ipswich, Fulham, Sunderland. So not bad, actually. But then for my money, if you've got Josko Vardiol, are you really going to rotate him for a Coventry City defender?
I keep seeing people talk about this and just think, it looks great. But then when it comes to it, I just think it's really hard to do.
Well, Vardiol scores away from home in a difficult game for Manchester City, keeps a clean sheet, gets DEFCON, maximum bonus, and it's an absolute disaster, isn't it? Because chances are Coventry concede one goal at home to whoever, and it ends up ruining it completely. So I think I'm leaning a bit more towards just having surefire picks. Once my team is more settled, so if I don't go with this idea of bench boosting game week one, so from the start, it would be like this. Or if I do go with that idea from when I wildcard, it would be a lot more about just picking 3, maybe 4 solid defenders who can play no matter what. and not maybe rotating as much. I just don't like the idea of rotating pairs as much in this DEFCON world as I used to, basically.
The one thing I would say, Ian, is I do quite like the idea of a rotating fifth midfielder and third forward, because in that position, I sort of agree with you on the defence. Like, I think if you want to go for two rotating 4.0s and just use them when you use them in defence, that works. That still works, because then you have them for when they're needed. But I think in the post-DEFCON era that we're now in, that fifth midfielder slot feels like it's going to be a defensive contribution giant. But there will be some weeks where you just think, oh, I don't really fancy playing them wherever it is, and I would rather play someone else. So that's why I'm kind of pondering on the, do I rotate my fifth midfielder with my third forward so that I make sure that I've always got one of them I'm happy to play each week. The rest of
my counter again would be, if you went with Sangare, for example, would you not want to play him in the difficult fixtures? Because if you're picking him for DEFCON, if he plays away at the Etihad, he's more likely to get more DEFCON, isn't he?
Yeah, I think so. But I think it depends on how you do it. Because if you've got, say you've got Ollie McBurney or Barry as your third forward, then you've probably spent a little bit more money on the fifth midfielder. So you just want to make sure that, like, when Barry is away at Manchester City, for example, you've got somebody who might pick you up DEFCON and looks to have an okay game in that one. I think it's that way more than it is the other way. If you want to go for a slightly cheaper third forward, then try to maximize when you would be playing them against who you have in that fifth midfielder slot.
Okay, so haven't got long left, but I thought we should just quickly go through each position and just pick out quickfire, not something we're very good at on this podcast, quickfire, who are the best picks? So we're not going to have too much of a debate, though it always ends in a debate because listeners are going to switch off, let's be honest. So let's start with the goalkeepers. If you want a cheap 4.5, who's your best pick, Sam?
I still think it's Kinski.
Ian?
I agree.
Phew, it's rare. If you want a premium, who's the best pick, Sam? This is obvious as well, I think.
It's Raya.
Ian is going to agree.
It is, but have a look at James Trafford as well. Like I mentioned before, I thought he looked great for Leeds. The fixtures are good. Their defensive record last season was really good. And I think there's a couple of attacking contributions in there. Assists, not goals, obviously.
And Ian, if you go for a premium keeper, you go for a 4 million alongside them, I'm guessing?
Yes, unless you're doing my strategy. Because I've got Roofs in there at the moment, who's 5 million. I don't hate Kinski and Dubravka together to start the season. I know it's using up a precious Spurs spot, Sam, but not everyone will feel the same way as you do about owning their assets.
It's just whether you want to lock in or not. It's the same with all teams. It's just whether you want to be locked in, that's all.
Well, if the fixtures swing in game week 7, like you said, maybe you can start the season with those two. And then if you're playing your wild card between those periods, you could then have a look at it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Premium defenders, Sam, best ones, how many?
The best one's Gabriel, but I think if you don't want to spend I like Gvardiol the best. I think at 5.5, he's really good value. I think probably two. If you've got Gabriel, though, you're probably on one premium and then everyone else is cheaper, but I think you can probably have two 5.5s quite comfortably.
Ian, the best.
I still like... Sorry, Kelly, I've ruined it, haven't I? I still like James Tarkowski. I know he's 6 million, but he was the fifth highest scoring defender last year.
I think you just like him as a bloke, don't you, as well?
Yeah, maybe. but it was only Senesi who got more DEFCONs than him last season. Everton's defensive record should be similar, I would say. So again, it's another pick where you sort of know what you're getting. The opening weekend fixtures, opening sort of section of fixtures are good as well. He will start. There's a bit of a question mark over Keane or Branthwaite, depending on Branthwaite's fitness. So, yeah, I think Tarky's all right too.
Budget ones, Ian?
I like the Ipswich lads. So Issa Diop, Dara O'Shea or Leif Davis. At the moment, I've gone for the more old school, marauding fullback pick of Leif Davis because he's scored goals in pre-season, which still excites me, even in a DEFCON world. Probably the two centre-backs are maybe more sensible picks. Maybe their floor is a little bit higher. But I basically think that investing in one of those three is a good idea at the start.
Mids, best premium, Sam?
I mean, it is Bruno, but outside of that, I think there's plenty of other really good options. I do like the Mbeumo double up with him to start the season. I think they're really good. I've gone right off the idea of both Palmer and Saka because I think there's better money to be spent across the Chelsea and Arsenal attacks than in those two. But I think you can definitely go there. And I would, are we bracketing Verts as a premium? I'm not sure we are at 7.5. He's probably more mid-price. It's just there's not so many. Yeah, there's just not so many premiums in the midfield. So I think, you know, you can feasibly have a midfield that has Bruno, Mbomo and Wirtz, and it still feels very premium.
Yeah. The thing is, it's like a graveyard, isn't it? Premium midfielders. I mean, remember the days where you had like Hazard, Alexis Sanchez,
Salah,
Mohamed Salah, you know, all mixing in. It doesn't really work like that anymore. That said, once we know what Liverpool's midfield looked like, once we know what Manchester City's new midfield looks like, once we know what Arsenal's midfield looks like, once we know what Chelsea's midfield looks like, you're looking at Fernandes, Semenyo, Mbeumo, Cunha, Wirtz, Szoboszlai, Foden, Palmer, Rodgers, Saka. We could be absolutely spoilt for choice. So it's the one area where I'm really intrigued to see what happens in the opening weeks, who end up being the picks, who end up being the form players, because you could take that midfield so many different ways.
One word, best budget option, Ian. Oh, I've put you on the spot there. Sam, do you want to go?
No.
It's Charles or Sangare for me. Pascal Gross is in there too.
Yeah, Gross.
Let's not mind Anton Stack.
Interesting. Forwards, I mean, Sam and I are going to say Haaland is just a gimme. But is it almost, it feels like most drafts, if you haven't got, most people, let's be honest, have got Haaland and Pedro.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because even you've got Pedro. So it feels like almost Pedro is, I'm not saying they're essential, but it feels like that third position is the one that's most up for grabs. And the cheaper forward. So I want to ask you about that. Who's the best cheaper forward at the moment, Ian? Because this is a position I keep kind of flitting between.
This is a public service announcement. FPL need to price Brian Maggio extremely appealingly, please, to 4.5. Try and ensure. If he's 4.5, he's in creepy, my team straight away. Even if he's 5 million, he's in my team straight away. I mean, the kid is only 17 years old, but the form he's shown in pre-season, the goal against PSG, even the chances he missed, the fact he was getting in the positions to miss the chances, there's obviously a little bit of a question mark over how Ollie Watkins affects his minutes. But if he's playing like this, he's clearly got the trust of Unai Emery for him to start him in a game like the Super Cup. Mm-hmm. He was the youngest player ever to start a European final. It broke a record set by Jimmy Greaves in the 1950s on Wednesday night. He's just been hugely impressive. Even the narrative of Villa having to go to the Court of Arbitration for Sport to be able to register him for this season. It won't take anything like that for him to be registered in my team. Just a very appealing price from FPL, please.
Sam, one word, best budget forward?
Igor Jesus, I think that's where I am.
Okay, I'm DCL at the moment, but that could very much change. That's where we're going to leave it, though, guys. Thank you. Thank you, Ian, for stepping in at last minute. Great to have you back on.
Pleasure.
As always. Sam, I'll see you next week. A reminder, we'll be back with the final pod before the season restarts in our usual Thursday slots. That'll be with you on Thursday afternoon. The Fantasy Show also returns. We're recording today. I don't quite know when that's out, though, so I won't say that because I'll probably get it wrong. The Fantasy Show will, of course, be back every Friday as well. So looking forward to it. Good luck sorting those drafts. See you soon, guys.